Reality. Welcome back to Strange Reality, the Paranormal Mystery Science Podcast. We are back from our two-week break. With me today is my good friend Alex.
What's happening?
And today we're going to be talking about something that is super, super cool, and it's something that, like, us as a species still knows almost nothing about it.
Right. I know next to nothing about these.
Yeah, so doing I've only heard it particularly by name, and it's used in a lot of different, like, pop culture, like especially disaster movies and things like that, like, or even just science fiction novels. Like, this word always pops up, and it's always like, oh, what really is it? Like, is it this, is it that? So today we're gonna be talking about, and it, from like an actual real scientific standpoint, as much as I can find it and what we actually know about it, we're gonna be talking about the singularity.
All right.
Dun, dun, dun. And for me, to kind of, for people, even I, like, researching it, I found like a pretty, like, dumbed down version of a way to describe it.
Awesome. Yeah.
So a singularity, like, the way I can describe it best is it's like the technological point of no return.
Okay.
It's just like, think of it like that, like the point of no return. However you apply that word, like, in your brain, yeah, that's what it is. So to kind of understand what a singularity is, imagine the force of gravity compressing you down into an infinitely tiny point so that you occupy literally no volume. Now, that sounds impossible, and that's because it is. Now, these singularities are found in the centers of black holes and at the beginning of the Big Bang. Now, these singularities don't represent something physical. Rather, when they appear in mathematics, they're telling us that our theories of physics are breaking down and we need to replace them with a better understanding. They are just like, they're really just mathematical and like gravitational anomalies that we just don't understand.
That's incredible. Like,
that's like, and
it's like, wild that they exist. And, you know, like, it's one of those things that's just hard to kind of fathom and wrap your head around.
Because it's a singularity isn't just one thing. So it's kind of hard to describe a singularity in the terms of, like, most people know what a black hole is, right? It's just this, like, it's this void that sucks in everything, including light, and there's no escape from it. And the center of, like, black holes are singularities. It's like I said, the point of no return.
Okay.
Yeah. So one of the kind of the cool things that I was, researching kind of found out is that, to kind of apply to more like real life, they consider the human singularity, so humans' point of no return, is when we, like, technologically speaking, come up with a way to upload our consciousness into AI.
Really?
That is like our singularity. That is our point of no return, is the ability for us to upload consciousness.
That's insane.
Isn't it?
So, like, I mean, that takes a little different definition of singularity then.
A little bit, yeah. In terms of, like, in terms of what we started realizing, what it was all just about, like, a singularity is what led to the creation of the universe. A singularity is the center of a black hole. I keep coming back to the point of no return, because that's literally what it is.
Right.
That's like the most broad, like, I can put it, because that's literally what it is. Now, the crazy thing about how I was kind of talking about earlier about how our singularity is us being bonded with AI, or us being able to upload consciousness, this is something that's already being worked on. I mean, look at Elon Musk. Have you heard of Neuralink?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. It's bananas. Like, they've already been testing it on, like, monkeys and stuff, and it's like,
yeah,
it's been doing really, really well too.
That one test with the monkeys, like, playing that game for, like, the banana smoothie, and, like,
and he was doing really well,
right? And what was it? It was literally like the computer was, like, telling the monkey's brain what to do.
Yeah, it was kind of like it was basically a way to kind of put machine learning inside your brain, which is kind of weird. So the way they kind of, like, they showed a video of them kind of inserting, like, the device, or, like, the interface, like, into the, like, the monkey's brain. And it's like the size of, like a watch battery, kind of.
Yeah, it's not even big, which is even more incredible. Yeah.
And it has, like, this weird little, like, I kind of picture them as like streamers on a bike, like on the handles, oh, yeah. but just like super thin and tiny.
Yeah.
So that's like the kind of image I get in my brain. And they're basically just, they connect to neurons in your brain and that's how they communicate. It's really weird.
That's crazy. Now in that same vein, that wouldn't be something that would be, say it was available to everybody, like financially, whatever, but compatibility wise, like, that wouldn't be available to everybody, or would it help us like understand how like different brains kind of work, you know, say somebody's got like, you know, like a brain disorder, you know, and their neurons aren't firing properly. Like, you know, what does that system do for a person like that?
Yeah. So I think that would definitely help people who like, maybe have Tourette's, or people who have people who are paralyzed, maybe.
Yeah, right.
Where they can somehow get the signals firing from their brain, like down to like their legs and things like that, like for them to walk again. That would be like the medical application of it. But like the normal like day-to-day life application, what's a good example. Remember when Google Glass was a thing?
Yeah.
And nobody bought it.
Oh my God. Not to get like too off, but did you see, apparently Samsung has some sort of like ocular like device now. It goes on like contacts.
Yeah, well, because,
and they somebody made some story about some girl sitting in the Rittenhouse trial like watching with those on her eyes.
Oh, for real?
Yeah.
Oh,
like,
wow.
There's like a whole like weird little article about it.
I wouldn't doubt it. They had I think the reason that nobody bought Google Glass is that A, looked ridiculous, and B, didn't really work that well.
I have a buddy who has Google Glass, and yeah, just he told me it works like absolute dog shit. You know,
that was like,
oh, excuse you.
Oh, jeez, I'm gonna have to cut that part out. The fact that like that was only just like a couple years ago, and then now like a couple years later, it's advanced so much, even in that regard.
Yeah.
But now they like they A, don't look dumb, and B, like are outperforming anything that Google Glass ever did.
Yeah.
So,
well, it's cool that like you say like that's the human singularity, the human point of no return, is to upload to AI.
Mm-hmm. Once we bond with machine,
that would be insane.
Yeah.
And it would do exactly, you know, every horror, like we would think, you know what I mean? As far as like, you know, people just be vegetables. I've listened to like, an audio drama about this. I played a video game that was like based around this, and, you know, and it always turns out the same, you know, like people are just absolutely miserable.
Yeah.
Like the game I played, you can either like at the end, you can either free everybody who's like done this, like it's this whole like planet of people, or you can go in and like relive like your memories with like your wife, and like you take that ending and like you're literally sitting there and like it shows them like standing on like a cliff, like arms around each other, and they're smiling. And then, like, kind of, like, the smiles just start to fade, and, like, they just seem miserable.
Jesus.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's that immortality thing. Like, there's no point in being immortal.
Wait, well, okay, what game is that?
It's called The Way.
The Way? Okay. Yeah,
it's kind of like a 8-bit side-scroller game. It's a newer game, but it's a lot of fun. I don't know. I absolutely love it. Like, really cool puzzles. Great story. And a really good perspective on that. You know,
yeah, my kind of modern day example was like Deus Ex or Cyberpunk.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, like you have like chips in your brain, like your brain's just like a computer too. That kind of stuff scares me.
I don't know. I think like enhancements.
Well,
I think enhancements are cool as fuck.
Yeah.
Like, but like uploading my consciousness completely into a,
like an AI
into an AI based like server or something. Like, no, that's terrifying.
That was the movie Transcendence.
Transcendence. I mean,
I think it was with Johnny Depp. I mean, the movie wasn't that great, but the concept was kind of cool.
And then, you know, what would happen thousands of years down the line, we would just have the Matrix.
Oh, snap.
You know what I mean?
I actually just rewatched The Matrix the other day, and like the rewatching it now in like 2021, I'm like, that could very much be our reality right now.
We're not far.
I mean, especially with the metaverse. We could
be in The Matrix right now.
Dude.
How would we know?
That's true, yeah.
How would we know? It's all a simulation.
So to ask the great, grandiose question, what is a singularity? Now, to kind of answer that, singularities can happen anywhere, and they are surprisingly common in mathematics that physicists use to understand the universe. To put it simply, singularities are places where the mathematics misbehave, typically by generating infinitely large values. There are examples of mathematical singularities throughout physics. Typically, anytime an equation uses 1 over x, as x goes to 0, the value of the equation becomes infinity.
So how do you even, like, discover that, like, mathematically, you know? Think about, like, the first dude. He's probably just sitting, like, in his room, like, just stressing, like, what does it mean?
There's this joke that I know. It's pretty funny. So a mathematician and an engineer walk into a bar, right? Mathematician goes, you know, if I weigh myself before I shit and after I shit and subtract the two, I can find out how much my shit weighs. And the engineer goes, dude, just shit on the scale. And it's such a good example of how their two brains think. The engineers are some of the funniest people I've ever met.
They're
hilarious, dude. Like, they're so, like, they have so many, like, funny solutions for every problem. It's so great.
Well, what's funny is, like, working with engineers and, like, being the tool maker, like,
yeah,
the role would be reversed for me in that joke. Like, the engineer would come in and be like, so if I weigh myself before and after, and, like, leave it to us, the tool makers, to be like, nah, dude, just shit on the scale. All right, I got disinfectant over here.
Dude, there's, like, journeymen in general. Engineers and journeymen are, like, some of the funniest people I've ever met. They're the best people. They're just the best people in general that I've ever met.
Well, they're so wicked smart, and they usually just got their own, like, weird attitude. Yeah. Like,
they have, like, such, like, a grizzled attitude. It's just, like, they have, like, this weird, like, it's almost like a positive cynicism towards life. That's, like, the best way I can put it.
That's exactly what it is.
So most of these singularities, however, can usually be resolved by pointing out that the equations are missing some factor, or noting the physicality and possibility of ever reaching the singularity point. In other words, they are probably just not real. That's really just, like, the mathematics has come to the conclusion that they're just like, oh, for this singularity to exist, either this factor just didn't happen or it's just not fucking real.
Yeah, like, fair enough. I mean, I get that too. Like, it's such an extreme, like, part of an equation. Like, it's got to take it to, like, yeah, an unreal,
right,
standing in the actual math equation. Like,
yeah, but there are singularities in physics that do not have simple resolutions. The most famous are gravitational singularities, the infinites that appear in Einstein's theory of general relativity, which is currently our best theory on how gravity works. The funny thing about Einstein that I've always, I guess, I don't want to say liked, but, like, kind of intrigued by, the fact that you have, like, his theory of relativity, and the fact that, like, so far, that's still used today. It's, like, such a great basis for a lot of other mathematical, like, problems.
Seriously.
Which is kind of weird, considering the fact that he was working for Germany during, well, I mean, not, like, against his will, kind of, right, like,
centrally
in the 1940s, and he defected to the U.S. But that's always been kind of, like, an interesting thing that, like, no matter what has happened in terms of human conflict, there's some other driving force behind, like, I guess, advancing mathematics and engineering. Like, look at something like Operation Paperclip.
Okay.
Are you familiar with Operation Paperclip?
I'm not. I lose it in the names.
So Operation Paperclip was basically the U.S. operation to acquire all of the Nazi scientists.
Okay.
Once World War II was over.
Yeah, gotcha.
So in the darker sense of the operation, you probably won't hear about this in textbooks because it's pretty messed up when you really think about it.
It's a little taboo.
When World War II was over and Operation Paperclip was started, the U.S. was faced with this. They wanted to kind of... Germany almost beat them in the race to the atom bomb.
Right.
They really almost did. Mm-hmm. And the fact that both these superpowers were developing it at this time, it was really just a matter of, like, who was going to get there first. Because of this, the U.S. decided, okay, the Nazis, like, they have a lot of, like, they have, like, a lot of scientific and engineering brain power behind them.
Right.
So we're going to basically cut them a deal where they don't have to go on trial for crimes against humanity. Instead, they'll work for us.
Oh, that's the American way, though.
So so NASA, when NASA started right after World War II, The founder of NASA, Wernher von Braun, was actually a Nazi scientist.
Wow. I mean, I understand to a point, though, too, because like you said, you know, there's a lot of great minds, like as sick and twisted as like the things that they were doing were, like,
still smart people.
They were incredibly intelligent. It was insane, like the kind of advancements they made in those like couple years in just that war, you know, like how badly can we fuck up other human beings? And they looked at it from a mathematical standpoint and figured it out.
I mean, a human had to think of like mustard gas and the hydrogen bomb and like all these terrible, terrible things. Like a group of humans like developed the Manhattan Project. Like it's crazy that like no matter what, there will always be some sort of conglomeration between two nations or two like groups of people over like the advancement of knowledge.
Right.
That's always been the crazy part.
Well, and that, you know, I think that comes back to, you know, not trying to endorse Nazi scientists, but, you know, just the human factor. Like, we have to advance. And, like, if there's a great mind over here, like, we need his resources then. Like,
yeah.
Even if he did develop mustard gas.
Yeah. You know. So, in general relativity, there are two kinds of singularities. There are coordinate singularities and true singularities. Coordinate singularities happen when an infinity appears in one coordinate system. Basically a particular choice of recording separations in time and space, but disappears in another. Now, for example, the physicist Karl Schwarzschild applied general relativity to the simple system of a spherical mass, such as a star. Now, he found that the solution contained two singularities, one in the very center and one at a certain distance from the center, known today as the Schwarzschild radius. For many years, physicists thought that both singularities signaled breakdowns in the theory, but it didn't matter as long as the radius of the spherical mass was larger than the Schwarzschild radius. Now, all physicists needed was for the general relativity to predict that the gravitational influence outside the mass, according to San Jose State University. So, yeah. To continue, but what would happen if an object were squeezed below its own Schwarzschild radius, you might ask? Then that singularity would be outside the mass. It would mean that the general relativity is breaking down in a region that it shouldn't. So I know that that's kind of like a lot to grasp, especially for the viewers.
That's
so
insane.
Yeah,
that's an insane amount to grasp.
Like I said, I got a lot of this. So the kind of where I kind of conglomerate this information, there's two books in like have you heard of Life Science magazine?
No, I haven't.
So pretty much you can kind of guess.
I'm sure it's just
the science publication.
Awesome.
So there's Life Science magazine, which I used for research, and there's also a book that I read called Out There, and it's I can't remember his name. He's got the author has a PhD in astrophysics so I used that as research. And I also used, there's another book called, Astrophysics for People in a Hurry by Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Okay.
Yeah. Awesome. So I kind of was reading a couple of those books and I was kind of like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And even like, and obviously like space and things like that. And like, obviously this podcast is a pretty good example of like my interest in the subject.
Of course.
It was just like, yeah, just blowing my brain to smithereens.
No, the second you brought up like the singularity topic to me too, like my brother is very, very much about this kind of stuff.
Okay.
Like he would be somebody definitely like you and him could go back and forth about this kind of stuff all night.
Yeah, that'd be
like,
awesome.
Yeah, seriously. Like, cause he's read both of those books. I'm almost positive.
Okay.
You know, last Christmas he got me a book called, The End of Everything, Metaphysically Speaking.
Oh, okay.
Oh, it's fucking cool. You know, it's about like what actually the end of the universe is going to look like, you know. Oh, hey, there it is. Yeah, I'm almost positive he's read this book.
Like, I'm going through my book drawer right now. Okay.
Shout out, Boomer. Astrophysics for People in a Hurry. You've read it.
So for Out There, I'm going to like, I want to quote the actual, the doctor's name just so that I have, it's accurate. So the book is called Out There, a scientific guide to alien life, antimatter and human space travel for the cosmically curious by Dr. Michael Wall. He has his PhD and he's a professor from University of Sydney in Australia.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's cool. Like,
And then obviously Neil deGrasse Tyson, we all know who that is.
Well, I love that, like, some of these great minds are, like, still around today. Like, in our lifetime, we're going to see crazy advancements in this topic.
You know what I mean? I'm kind of excited for, like, because, I mean, and actually this is another episode that, like, that's kind of in the works that I want to do. It's about the new, telescope that NASA's launching.
Okay.
It's kind of, it's not meant to, I don't think it's meant to replace the Hubble telescope, but it's just meant to see farther. That's really all it is.
Did they launch that yet or?
No, get this. So I actually just read this article like just the other day. So I think they were prepping it for launch and they dropped it.
Oh no.
they dropped the telescope. Yeah. And obviously it's a satellite sized telescope. So it's huge. A
$2 billion mistake.
So I think, so basically what happened was when they strapped the telescope to the crane, one of the straps snapped and it like dropped. And I'm like, I think the telescope cost like $2 billion. I was like, dude, come on.
I hate to be whoever was like in charge of that rigging.
Yeah, that guy's probably fired, but
No, he's getting strapped to that telescope and get launched with it.
The guy who probably strapped this definitely from the Midwest, like, be like, he was like, that's not going anywhere. we all can picture this guy, too.
Yeah, right.
He's probably wearing like a Miller Lite hat, like 100%.
He's got a plaid jacket on.
A plaid jacket. Yeah, 100%. He's probably from Minnesota. So now that brings us to gravitational singularities. And where do gravitational singularities happen?
I don't know.
Well, the singularities at the centers of spherical masses remained. If you squeeze an object below its Schwarzschild radius, then its own gravity becomes so intense that it just keeps on squeezing all by itself.
That's
all the way down to an infinitely tiny point, according to National Geographic.
That's so cool.
So yeah, so to kind of recap what that said. So if you squeeze, the object in the Schwarzschild radius, it can. Once you basically jumpstart like the squeezing, quote unquote, the gravitational like condensing, it'll just start doing it on its own.
So is that the kind of thing that they're going to be able to do with that Hadron Collider?
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up. So that's something that the cool thing about the Hadron Collider, and I would love to do a part two because it's such a fascinating like piece of human engineering.
Seriously.
They can already like, I think they had the intention when they built it too. So it's a particle collider to, you know, basically collide two particles together. But so the speed in which they can collide particles is 99.99% the speed of light.
That's insane.
Isn't that crazy?
Like to be able to move something that fast on our planet is just so crazy to me.
So to kind of touch on the Hadron Collider. So one of the fears with the Hadron Collider was, especially when they first built it, was that they were going to accidentally create a singularity in the actual facility, and it was going to destroy like the universe.
it could.
Imagine a guy working at National Geographic or Life Science magazine just typing that like on his computer. He was like, and it might destroy the universe. He probably just sat there for a second and was like,
lit up a cigarette, poured a glass of whiskey,
and he was like, oh
shit.
Like, I bet you he thinks like any like slight little like shake in the ground, he's like, oh, this is it. This could be it, bro. You know,
he's staying at a hotel like in the town.
He's staying in like a Marriott. So for decades, physicists debated whether a collapse to an infinitely tiny point was possible or whether some other force was able to prevent total collapse. Now, while white dwarfs and neutron stars can hold themselves up indefinitely, any object larger than about six times the mass of the sun will have too much gravity, overwhelming all their forces and collapsing into an infinitely tiny point, a true singularity, according to NASA.
So we wouldn't be able to do something that large with that collider then. But does it need to be that large?
Well, there's another...
Do we need the mass or do we need to be able to produce the singularity first?
Well, I mean, if you factor in Murphy's law, then I mean technically it can happen.
Fair enough.
There's another law I'm about to quote because I just can't remember the name of it, but it's another law that basically it states that anything in science can just randomly happen with no prior reason.
That's so cool.
Which is basically just Murphy's law. Law is like anything that if you've ever seen the movie Interstellar, it's whatever can happen will happen.
Yep.
So So I don't, that probably doesn't help.
No, right.
So yeah, it's pretty much going to be like, yeah, you're pretty much just like fucked.
Yeah. Fair enough.
So
that's crazy.
Yeah. So basically like, especially when it comes to the Hadron Collider, like I can't even believe this thing exists. Right. I really just can't believe it. And the fact that like the implications behind, like if you mess up,
yeah,
like how do you apply for a job at CERN?
Well, okay, think about this. There's a bunch of weird, just like multi-organism species living on a rock, floating around a giant burning ball of hydrogen,
right?
That are playing with this kind of fucking technology.
That's a good point.
Like a couple million miles away from a giant burning ball of mass.
And what is it? If you put humanity on like a cosmic calendar, we exist for like, our existence takes place on like the last minute of like December 31st.
Right.
It's like that insignificant in terms of like all that's happened throughout the universe since the Big Bang.
And the kind of developments we've like made towards like replicating that kind of stuff, at least mathematically.
Oh, dude, I can't even believe that. I really, like I said before, I really can't believe that thing even exists.
It's just so cool.
It's so – the fact that like another thing that's crazy – and I've said this, if you want to check out our Large Hadron Collider episode, then by all means check it out. I can't remember what episode number it is. Like, it's like – seven.
It's there in the list.
It's there in the list if you want to check it out. But it's like, it's just like underneath a town. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like the facility is underneath like a city. Like,
well, it's how long or how, yeah, how long around? Like,
it was it was a couple kilometers.
Okay. So yeah, it's literally like surrounding this town. Like,
and it kind of, it's not like a ring. It's like, it's a couple rings that are like, It's like a Venn diagram is like how it looks underground.
Yeah.
That's like the tube structure works. It's really weird, yeah. But
more details in episode 8 of Strange Reality.
Yes,
sir. Large Hadron Collider.
The Large Hadron Collider. So that brings us to naked singularities. Now, what are naked singularities? Now, these are what we call black holes. So now we get to like the actual, what we all know is black holes. Those are the naked singularities. Now, black holes are a point of infinite density surrounded by an event horizon located at the Schwarzschild radius. Now, the event horizon protects the singularity, preventing outside observers from seeing it unless they traverse the event horizon, according to a Quanta magazine. So there, so that's like, so if you've seen the, if you've seen Interstellar, that's like the, I think the only, well, unless you want to talk about the actual movie Event Horizon.
Yeah, right.
That was a great movie too. So Interstellar, in that movie, they actually, the cool thing, fun fact about that movie is like they have a black hole, like in the movie.
Yeah.
That they like that, like Cooper and like he has to go through. Now what they did to create that with special effects was actually bonkers.
Seriously, like, because I mean, you don't have a real perception of it.
No, because you can't see it. It doesn't exist. It doesn't technically exist,
right?
Like, because light can't like pass through it, so you can't physically see it. So, what they did was they got like a couple mathematicians and like astrophysicists like on board for the movie, and they mathematically like program, like they developed a program to simulate a black hole, right? And they plugged in all the math into this like simulation program that would constitute a black hole, and it literally created a simulation of a black hole.
That's so cool.
So they were
able ever have that before that?
Or I don't think so.
This
I think
movie was, just I think advanced.
Was, I think it was brand technology. New. Yeah, like, I think it was brand new for that movie.
That's so cool.
And then they added special effects into it, like the light, kind of like the spherical, like the Schwarzschild radius of the light. They added that in there in special effects. But the actual, what you're seeing is like legitimately, like it was rendered, like it was simulated. It's an actual simulated black hole.
That's so cool. Like to come up with that for a movie, just to like, think about that too. Like the entertainment industry, like, come on, like we finally put like enough fire under these mathematicians.
I know.
It's for
pretty,
a movie.
It's honestly pretty great. I kind of like, and especially because a lot of movies just kind of doctor things up for the sake of like a movie.
Right.
But I was actually pretty happy with the fact that like, that they were able to do something so scientific like that. So, and have to be realistic.
Right.
But so physicists long thought that in general relativity, all singularities like this are surrounded by event horizons. And this concept is known as the cosmic censorship hypothesis. So named because it was surmised that some process in the universe prevented or censored singularities from being viewable. However, computer simulations and theoretical work have raised the possibility of exposed or naked singularities. A naked singularity would have been just that, a singularity without event horizon, fully observable from the outside universe. Whether such exposed singularities exist continues to be a subject of a considerable debate. So we do have a photograph of the black hole.
And it's not far. It's only like 15,000 light years away.
It wasn't. Well, I mean that. I mean, to us, that's far. But like,
to a black hole, that's not.
No, not at all. So 15,000. So okay. So that would mean that. So to take in this into consideration. So imagine. So if the CERN Hadron Collider can launch particles at 99.99% the speed of light, right? This is kind of for the viewers too. Well, I guess you too, but yeah. More for the listeners. So imagine that speed, it would take that collider 15,000 years for it to reach where that black hole was taken.
That's crazy.
Isn't that crazy?
That's
15,000 years. and somebody with like a Nokia camera just, which, I mean, that's a Nokia camera. That's what it looks like though.
Yeah.
It looks like a camera phone kind of thing. That's like how that's
because it's so far away, just super advanced.
I can't even believe that because it even captured like light going through it too, which is like insane because before we didn't, and at the time of when Interstellar was made, we had simulated what a black hole looked like, but we never actually knew. Like we didn't have any
real. It was always kind of just a mathematical guess, right?
Yeah, we didn't have any actual like evidence for it, so it was kind of just like just a mathematical guess.
That's so cool, and it's cool that like we're finally like getting close enough to like true proof of like these mathematicians, like science, like that's crazy.
I want to know. So say you're like a mathematician at like NASA, right?
Yeah.
Do you think like your job is pretty like laid back?
Yes.
I think so too. Yeah. I don't know why I think that, but well, I think that too.
It's more research than anything. Like it's not like you're trying to figure something out. Like you're more just kind of playing around, kind of figuring things out. I imagine too, it's not just like one dude, it's a dude or a couple people like with a whiteboard and like, they're just kind of going back and forth, like bouncing off each other, you know? Cause I couldn't imagine one person coming up with some of these.
Well, no, I'm just saying, yeah. I mean like anytime I think of like a smart guy with a whiteboard, it's always that picture of like Charlie Day.
Like the dude probably looks a lot like that over at NASA. You know? Like,
and the fact, like for me, I think that the team of mathematics and our mathematicians and engineers that were like work on that kind of stuff, especially like the era of NASA where like they shut down the shuttle program,
right?
And they weren't launching any rockets into space. They probably were like, for like the next 10 years, they were like, man, these paychecks are really nice.
Yeah,
and seriously. I really have to work for them. So,
well, yeah, there's no deadline on that kind of stuff. Well, you know, no. You're literally just researching and you're advancing.
Like, you're either like on the rover team or you're part of like that misfit crackpot team of mathematicians that are just kind of like doing like, cause you know, the cocaine's probably gone cause they don't really need it.
Nah, dude, caffeine powder all the way.
I think during the Apollo mission, they were definitely coked up for sure. During the Apollo program, they were definitely like coked up out of their minds.
Oh, I mean, but for real, you're watching how long does it take for like a spaceship to like get out into space, you know?
Well, I think for
the you got a team of engineers sitting there that entire time, sitting in a chair just like this.
Yeah, doing bugs. Like, well, they were doing what were they doing? It took them like 2-3 weeks to get to the moon,
right? You know, and like there were people on point for that the entire time. Like, granted, I'm sure they took shifts and whatever, but
imagine being the night shift part of that crew. Ooh. Every night shift crew is pretty much the same.
Yeah, true.
It's pretty much the same, no matter like what the job
bunch
is.
Bunch of people running on just caffeine and anger.
It's just like, yeah. You know? Yeah.
But it also, that makes me wonder too. I was going to say something. I lost the thought. It's gone. It literally, like I was going to say it and it just poofed right out of my head.
Do you know what it was about?
Yeah, it was about like the teams of people that are.
Oh, like about
like no, the, I, you think there's like a morale guy? Oh, that's pretty funny. The guy who's just like really high spirited, just keeping everybody going the whole time.
There's got to be.
There has to be.
Because when I worked at Woodman's, and I was like, I did night shift a couple of times just to help out.
Yeah.
And what they do is, and it's super funny, and I actually get kind of pissed at it too. So during the night shift, they play like really fucking uppity, like crazy music, yeah, like in the store, right, like to keep people awake. And there is like one or two guys that are just like, they like to me were like on just like copious amounts of like drugs that are just keeping them awake. They were all like jacked up on Adderall. Like,
oh yeah.
And they were like the hype beasts for like the night.
You know how many people we work with that are jacked up on Adderall?
Listen, man, Adderall. Adderall ain't no joke, you guys. I used to take Adderall like when I was in school. It's pretty fucked. But then again, if you want to lose weight, Adderall's your guy.
If you want to make money, Adderall's your guy.
That's also pretty true. Yeah, if you're not taking it, of course. You can't be, you know, snorting the product.
All right. Okay. All right. What's really at the center of a black hole, Kyle?
Okay. So, because there are mathematical singularities, nobody knows what's really at the center of a black hole. Now, to understand it, we need a theory of gravity beyond the theory of gravitational relativity, or general relativity, excuse me. Specifically, we need a quantum theory of gravity, one that can describe the behavior of strong gravity at a very tiny scales according to Physics of the Universe, which is a publication.
Okay.
So, hypotheses that modify or replace general relativity to give us a replacement of a black hole singularity include the Planck stars, or a highly compressed exotic form of matter, gravistars, a thin shell of matter supported by exotic gravity, and dark energy stars, an exotic state of vacuum energy that behaves like a black hole. Now, to date, all of these ideas are hypothetical, and a true answer must await quantum theory of gravity.
Hypothetical?
Yeah, basically.
You said hypothetical. Sorry.
Did I say hypothetical? Hypothetical. I don't know. Did I read it that way? Let me look back at the notes.
But.
Oh, I just read it that way. Okay. Hypothetical is what I meant.
That's also like, it's very cool, you know, like, because it is all hypothesis right now. You know what I mean? Like in that exotic form of matter and exotic gravity, you know, those are things that we still can't even comprehend. And I'm glad that, like, you know, it's taken into consideration hypothetically. It's something I never thought about until I just read that paragraph. Like, you know.
But, like, if anyone, like I said, another, like, funny, hilarious thing that, like, I just, like, when I think of, like, a day in the life of, like, almost a Nazi scientist. Not that. Oh, my God. A NASA scientist. Like, so, say, like, what you're working on is purely just, like, speculatory, right?
Yeah.
Dude, your job must be so easy. If technically what you're researching, like to you doesn't even exist, you could like,
you're just making shit up and trying to prove it.
Now maybe that's just us. Maybe we're like the actual like irresponsible ones of the world, and maybe the people that actually do that job are like really serious about it.
The understanding they have of like matter and the universe and how things work is so far beyond you and I, I'm sure. You know what I mean? Like,
but there's gotta be that one guy who's just like, who's like, so they have like a team meeting, right? And everyone's just like, all right, guys, theory of relativity, we're really gonna like crack down on that today. We really gotta find out black holes are real. Everyone's just like, yeah, like everyone's like super a pipe. Like we're gonna do overtime, blah blah blah, right?
They pass out Adderall to everybody.
There's that one like yuppie in the back who's like, I mean, we could, or we could just not do that and just like, you know, kind of, you know, screw off the rest of the day. What about
exotic gravity? Hear me out. All right.
That kind of guy. What about exotic gravity? Yeah. He like just came back from like a strip club.
Yes. That's why you're here, Jerry. That's why you're here.
You're a go-getter, bro. Now to the real meat and potatoes. We'll get to like, we'll ask the question, what is the Big Bang singularity?
Why are we here? What started it all biblically?
Yes. All no, right. The Big Bang Theory, not to be confused with the, you know, early 2000s sitcom. Yeah, kind of a turd. But I don't want to find any Big Bang Theory fans out there. Last couple of seasons were trash. But anyway, so the Big Bang Theory, which assumes general relativity to be true, is the modern cosmological model of the history of the universe. It also contains a singularity. In the distant past, about 13.77 billion years ago, according to the Big Bang Theory, the entire universe was compressed into an infinitely tiny point. Now, there's a couple different theories beyond just the Big Bang.
Yeah.
But, like, why the universe, like, or how, or I should rephrase, how the Big Bang happened really is what it is. The conditions before that. So, what I've read is, the best we can describe it is, like, imagine, like, a Venn diagram, okay? So, imagine, like, just, like, black, just, like, empty space, right?
Yeah.
And then you have, like, an anomaly of light that is aware of its own existence, and it's aware of a 360 degree like radius outside of its own existence, right? And then the theory goes, so to kind of just streamline it, so that anomaly becomes self-aware at this point.
Yeah.
Then it moves a little bit over here and becomes self-aware at this point, so it creates like that Venn diagram.
Yeah.
And then it goes like outward and outward, and then it creates like kind of like just like a pyramid of like Venn diagrams, all of its like own self-awareness, and then that for and that became like the first like conscious entity, and then that somehow or another through various scientific means became the Big Bang and then the universe as we know it.
I imagine something like that. It's as conscious as a cell.
Yeah.
Reproducing. You
like,
know what I
like
mean?
Like a single cell organism.
Yeah. Like, and imagine like that's just that on a larger scale, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And it just kept reproducing, kept evolving and getting bigger, growing into other things, into this fucking giant universe we have today.
Yeah. Now, when it comes to the Big Bang Theory being that the entire universe was compressed into an infinitely tiny point, physicists know that the conclusion is incorrect. Though the Big Bang Theory is enormously successful at describing the history of the cosmos since that moment, just as... Hold on, I lost my point in the notes, my bad.
Oh, no.
Oh, no, I messed up.
You went up.
I went up.
There you go.
There we go. Wait.
If you were in the physicists.
Why, was I?
Yep.
I found it. All right. All right, let me try that again. Though the Big Bang Theory is enormously successful at describing the history of the cosmos since that moment, just as with black holes, the presence of the singularity is telling scientists that the theory, again, general relativity, is incomplete and needs to be updated. One possible resolution to the Big Bang singularity is causal set theory. Under causal set theory, space-time is not a smooth continuum, as it did with general relativity, but rather made up of discrete chunks named space-time atoms. Since nothing can be similar than one of these atoms, singularities are impossible. Bruno Bento, a physicist studying this topic in the University of Liverpool in England, told Life Science.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And like it makes sense that it's incomplete. It needs to be updated. I mean, it's something that is completely theoretical, you know, from the beginning. You know, it's not completely proven. We don't have 100%, you know, proof, fact, you know, to that. Like,
so like even reading to you guys what I've researched about singularities, it's like even hard for me, like even while reading it, to kind of grasp what it actually means, because it's so mind-boggling.
It's huge.
It's so mind-boggling how like there's such a huge basically like scientific anomaly that like either does or does not exist.
Exactly.
And whether it does exist is like up for debate. It's just crazy to me. Like, we for a long time we didn't even think black holes really existed.
Mm-hmm.
And then now we have a picture of one.
That's so cool.
You ever seen the what is it? It's like the printout of the mathematics it took to like take a picture of like the black hole?
No.
It's like so I think it was a woman who happened to like take a picture of it.
Yeah.
And like the mathematics it took was like taller than she was.
That's awesome.
It was insane for me to look at.
That's so cool.
Holy crap. And I think like for retrospect, the Apollo mission, and granted, this was before like modern day computers. The first Apollo mission was like, it was like, say that the stack that the woman took the picture of was like 6 feet.
Yeah.
The Apollo mission mathematics was 24 feet of like just math. It was like something crazy. So 6 feet of math just to take a picture of a black hole that we didn't even know existed.
Which honestly, now thinking about it, like that doesn't even seem like that much math.
I know, right?
You know, like I would have more than 6 pages of scratch notes trying to figure that shit out.
Like, only I would want to know, like, I think that conceptually I can't understand it. I would want to know what's actually on the printout.
Right.
Like, I want
what's
like,
on that printout has to be the actual, like, that's past the theory phase. That's past working things out on the whiteboard. You know what I mean? The ideas and stuff. That's taking all of that and putting it, plugging all the numbers they needed into these equations. They had the equations they're running, and you know, there wasn't any theory on that 6 feet. I like to think, you know what I mean? It was all like what they needed to work out was right there.
Do you
know, if that makes sense? I don't know.
it would be funny if like that 6 feet of just like print out of math was just like one big flip book. It's just like a flip book of like it's just like it's just a black hole rendering like through like sketches,
right?
It'd be pretty funny, but yeah. So
Bruno Bento,
physicist. I kind of botched that part up because I have dyslexia, so I apologize. So I'll kind of go over it one more time. So since nothing can be smaller than one of these atoms, and it's referencing space-time atoms, singularities are impossible. Now, Bruno Bento, a physicist studying this topic at the University of Liverpool in England, told Life Science. So Bruno Bento told Life Science that nothing can be smaller than space-time atoms.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So how small is that compared to like atoms we've studied and discovered?
Yeah, so relativity, it's kind of the idea that like time flows like on a linear plane.
Yeah.
And like, especially like a movie, like there's a movie called, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Arrival.
I have.
So the aliens in Arrival, they obviously they're telling the main characters what's already happened to them. Mm-hmm. As if it's like they're from the future,
right?
But to their race and to their like those aliens, they don't picture time as something that's linear,
right?
So they already know, like they're all basically all knowing.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of warning the main characters that there's like this imminent doom, but it's already happened for them. Now, for everyone listening, like watch the movie and it's so good. And maybe I might have just spoiled
a really good movie.
I might have just spoiled a little bit of it, but
it's been out a couple years.
That's true. It's definitely still watch it because it's so good. It's a really good movie. Interstellar and Arrival are like one of my favorite like sci-fi kind of space movies.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So that's the singularity, you guys.
That's crazy.
The point of no return.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Like, to think about just that stuff. Like, I don't know. Imagine like having the brain power that like those mathematicians have, having that understanding, because it's stuff that I can't even like, I don't know. Like, what's the word I'm looking for? I can't visualize it. I can't think about it. Like,
you can't even comprehend it.
I can't comprehend it. Exactly. You know, like,
especially since like when you consider the fact that like, their brains are just different than ours.
Oh,
like if we went to school, like went to school for like astrophysics, physics and like.
So that kid had an understanding at 4 years old.
That's okay. What I'm saying. So they were like, they were definitely prodigies like from like a young age.
You know
age.
What I was doing at 4 years old? Cracked my head open after falling off a fence at Six Flags.
Like, yeah, nobody's ever looked at that kid and thought, oh, you know what? He's going to do some shit at NASA one day.
Right.
Dude, I can't even tell you how many times I fell off my big wheel when I was a kid. You don't think I was going to be building rockets at 10 years old? Just
hell no.
6 years after that? Yeah, you know, it was really weird. He hit his head off his big wheel and all of a sudden he just started building rockets in the backyard. It was
you know
really
what?
Weird.
Maybe that's what it is, though. Maybe they fell off something and like got a screw knocked into place.
I don't know. Anybody that I've met who's that smart, like they're not normal.
Right.
They're weird.
Okay, so now this brings me back to Elon Musk's Neuralink. Imagine like they gave your brain, yours or my brain, the power of one of those people.
Yeah.
What would it do to our brain? I feel like my brain would just melt out my ears.
But the so yeah, like the idea that like the fact that like the people that were born naturally smart and to kind of level the playing field, we just get like this implant that makes us just as smart as they are.
What it's going to take to get off this fucking rock with the rest of the people on it.
I mean, look at what Elon Musk is already trying to do. He's trying to colonize Mars.
Yeah.
Well, which I mean, okay. If you had to take it, would you go
to Mars? No, it's a cold fucking rock of nothing.
Okay. Right? I'm glad we're on the same page. Yeah. I think if I could come back, I would, but yeah. I wouldn't like go to like live there.
No, it doesn't. It sounds cool. It would be awesome to be a part of that kind of voyage.
It's cool in theory,
but I can never go to like Hawaii for the rest of my life. You know what I mean? Like you'd be living your life like in a space suit, in bags and stuff.
You would live in your life like in a dome.
Yeah. And like, I don't know, that just doesn't sound appealing at all to me, you know. Now, if it was like Futurama Mars, I'd be all right.
Yeah, that know? Mars was like, every that place was sweet.
It was. It was like a Western, you know.
Yeah. Would you live on like a space station? Like a really highly advanced, like huge space station. Not like the ISS, I don't mean that.
You know, I think, you know, you see it theorized in all the movies and stuff is most of those people who are there are born there. And to have a reality that's only existed on that would be fine. Me, myself, I would get depressed and I don't know, shoot myself out the fucking.
You'd really have to it would have to be really convincing.
Exactly. You know what I mean? Cause like you're literally walking away from the life that like humans know and love.
If you were an explorer, I could see it. Like if you're like, even if you were born like on Earth or something like that, you were like an explorer, then like, okay, that's fine. But then like, if you were just like, okay, you live here and now you're just going to live there and that's it.
Well, like I try to think about like, what would I do to like entertain myself?
Right.
You know, like, am I just going to go, play a video game online? You're only playing people on that space station.
Yeah.
You get pissed off. You go over to their fucking room and just punch them in the nose. But no, I don't know if I could do that either. You know, I'm a very grounded person. I like being on the planet.
Like, you're the kind of guy that's like, okay, I live in a space station, but I need a bar. Which I'm the same way.
Yeah, right. Like I need somewhere to like to take care of some vices.
Exactly. All right, well, I think that's a good way to wrap it up.
Awesome.
All right,
fantastic.
Well, if you guys like what you heard, please consider rating us on Apple Podcasts. Really helps us out. And leave a comment, subscribe, all the usual stuff. We'll see you in the next one.
Thank you.
Reality.